afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It is August 8th, 2021, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you got for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
We love those guys.
Yeah, and they're a little harder to find this week because of the smoke, but...
their storefront is obscured.
Obscured, yeah. We'll leave the light on the sign a little longer nowadays to illuminate where we're at. It's pretty smoky, but Pape Machinery is everything John Deere. We have tractors, mowers, implements, part sales and service. They do it all up there. Go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Pine Grove and Oasis Road there on Twin View Boulevard. And you can give them a call. 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Ta-da! Okay, so, hold on, bringing up my page here. So our guest today is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
Yeah, we're going to talk nuclear proliferation. Yeah, I'm having a problem.
Okay, we're not going to start until you get
I'm not going to say it again.
I remember.
I'm not going to say it wrong one more time.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I remember when, I'll have to make up a song for you. I remember when my sister couldn't say the word aluminum. And so my dad made us, this is what you do when you have five little kids aluminum in a car and you're driving across the country. We had to sing aluminum for miles.
Yeah. So now when she says it, she goes aluminum.
Yeah, I know. I've got to call her and ask her about that. I wonder if she even remembers that. She was a little kid. It's good to be the oldest.
What do you want to ask?
You remember
her?
All the good stuff.
Quick, say aluminum.
Oh my gosh. So he unfortunately is out. What was he doing? Grocery shopping?
Yeah, doing a little errand for the wife, and he would be in shortly.
Yeah, so he's racing around Virginia right now without us because he's not on the phone and at the grocery store. So, you know, in this little brief span of time we have to kill, I was going to bring up my favorite topic.
Do tell.
One guess what it is.
Favorite topic. Marijuana.
There you go. my second favorite topic's water. Well, they're kind of tied together, though. So you know, I was listening to the last show just prior, and they were talking about. I just caught part of it, so I'm not going to discuss what they were discussing because I don't know. But I did hear one statement that was made that, you know, all the chemicals and things that are just destroying our environment. And I got to tell you, if you haven't figured out that there are massive, massive amounts of chemicals on marijuana, and that is being grown over large swaths of land in rural America, unfortunately, at the current time, as far as I know, no major dope grows are burning up, although we have fires everywhere, which is just frustrating.
You know, I was up in Medford Thursday and Friday, and I was a little surprised to see all the commercial grows right off the side of the freeway. I mean, they have some are in greenhouses, some are right out in the open, have big fences around them. But
I think they're pretending they're hemp. Are they pretending they're hemp, or have we just gone full?
No, it's full on marijuana.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I mean, these are like an acre, you know, and right next to somebody's house. And but I counted several of them. I mean, they were drive along and it was like orchards.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's
and the thing is, we know from every product I think that's ever been made that it's cheaper to do it the wrong way than it is to do it the right way. So when you're looking at, you know, the correct chemicals, the correct licensing, all of that stuff, you know, people have said, oh well, if we just legalized it, all this crime would go away. Well, that's just dumb. I mean,
yeah,
guns are legal. Those are still illegally trafficked. People are legal, and they're illegally trafficked. Just look at the southern border. There's always money in crime. And it doesn't have to be an illegal substance to be a crime.
Well, there's a lot more money growing it illegally than legally.
Exactly.
And so what are they going to do?
So
pay their taxes?
Besides the fact that it's a bad thing, there are a lot of people who think, well, I'm not involved in any of that. I don't have any contact with that whatsoever. But you might. Are you part of an organization that takes money from the dope industry?
A lot of them do that you don't even know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You should be looking into that. Are you, I was speaking with someone who has a material yard last week. And I said, well, gee, I hope you're not hauling up into Siskiyou County. And they said, well, yeah, we've been hauling a lot lately. And I said, uh-huh, whereabouts? Off of A-12. I said, oh, well, that's terrific. That's where all the dope grows are. So you are actually hauling material, to illegal enterprises. And I said, you'd be lucky if your trucks aren't, pulled over and confiscated as part of the furtherance of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that and you think, are you accidentally helping? And for the people who think, well, it's not hurting anyone, you're totally hurt. You're totally helping. You are the problem.
Mm-hmm. I my former employer, I called on a customer down in Chico that, was in the
Soil business.
Thank you. Yeah. And they did bulk soil. They did bag soil. They couldn't make it fast enough. Their business was just exploding, and I think it still is. They buy just tons and tons and tons of amendments to grow. And, I mean, that market was there before, but it was a fairly small market, you know, for
gardening and
homeowners and gardening and that sort of thing. But now it's millions and millions of dollars.
I don't know. We're all going to have to kind of band together and do something with that because it's not benefiting anybody. And, you know, the other thing is if you think that, you know, buying it from these shops, well, I'm going to go to these shops because that's organic and they've tested all that. And, you know, we did a show a few weeks ago with, Dr. Drum.
Dr. Drum, yeah.
I can't think of his first name anyway. Whatever. Philip Drum. And he's a pharmacist anyway, has a lot of good information about marijuana. If you go on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, it's wethepeopleradio.
You're looking at me like, what?
I don't know. I just saw an opportunity and I took it. So at wethepeopleradio.us, on the top, there's a tab. It says pot. And if you click on that, we've got a bunch of different shows on there. If you think it's not hurting anybody, definitely look at the shows with a lady named Libby Stout. And she is out of Colorado. Colorado's a mess right now. These states that have legalized it and gone in full blast, the media is doing a really good job of not telling you that it's a disaster. But the people who live there and the folks that are dealing with it, smoking it in the house while you have little kids. She explained very, very handily how it's hardwiring their brains for addiction. So you're not going to know for 15, 16, whenever, how many years later when your baby grows up and decides to try whatever, and then you find out you've hardwired them for addiction. Mm-hmm. So this is something that
Well, aside from the fact that, you know, mommy and daddy do it, I can do it.
Well, there's that.
How many kids have started smoking cigarettes because their parents did, you know? I mean,
I think in this room, what, one out of two?
Yeah.
And the only reason I didn't was because I had crappy lungs. And I don't think I had crappy lungs because my dad smoked cigarettes in the car for, you know, 3,000 miles across the country in the summertime with the windows rolled up. That's probably not it.
No.
But I don't think it helped the asthma part.
Probably not.
It's probably not all that good. But it's much more harmful than that. And the chemicals that they're finding on these illegal grows, and who knows where that pot goes? Who knows where that goes? You have no idea. It could mm-hmm. be in the shop right down the street from you. And I'm always looking for information. So if you know of, especially here in Northern California, if you know ties, if you've got, you see links between maybe some of the legal enterprise and some of the, criminal enterprise that's going on. If you know any of that stuff, I'd love to hear from you because I would love to pass that on to law enforcement. Oh my gosh. And right then the phone rang. That was awesome. It's probably Dr. Pry though. unless he teleported himself, he couldn't have done grocery shopping that fast though. Okay, so let's move to water real swiftly, to bring something. Oh, it was him. He was teleporting. So, okay, just to tie up the water thing, because we're hearing a lot about how with our forest fires, you know, it's because of climate change and blah, blah, blah. You know, I say this all the time, but if you've ever built a campfire, you know, it starts with little twigs, then medium sized stuff, and then, you know, a couple of good logs. Our forests out here in the West, in case you're not from here or haven't been here in the last 30 years, that's what they look like. They look like big, giant versions of the perfect campfire. And
yeah, all it needs a nice hot spark to set it off.
Yeah, so yeah, we've
it's,
had
it's
just
layers. When you go out in a lot of these areas and just walk in the forest, it's like walking on a mattress. It's just thick with pine needles and debris that's just bone dry.
Yeah, the dead and dying trees, because we're not thinning our forests. They're all the same height. I mean, you're not having open space with meadows anymore because everyone got hysterical about any kind of, you know, clear cutting or open space. People like to blame PG&E, and in some cases it is their fault. In others, it's laws. They're only allowed to, and that's only because Congressman LaMalfa and some other people worked for years to pass legislation to remove, quote, hazard trees. That's all they can remove, hazard trees under the lines. Well, you and I both know if there's a 100-foot tree and it's 40 feet from the power line and it's leaning, but not leaning enough, so it's not a hazard tree. But as soon as that blows over, it's ripping the lines off the pole. So then, of course, you know, well, all the power lines should be underground. Well, that's just not possible everywhere in the entire United States. It's just silly. So anyway, just realize there are a lot more factors, and don't buy into all these stupid lies, you know. You look at our reservoirs up here. They have let all this water go on purpose. The reservoirs are not dry because of the drought. We had the water, and they've let it go. You know, the excuse is for the fish, but I guess where I come from, people count more than fish. So don't buy that lie either. Can't fix all that stuff with just dopey solutions
like
that.
Like 50% of our water is just flushed.
50% of California's water is flushed to the ocean.
Yeah.
For
fish.
And I know you've heard my spiel a million times. Environmental purposes.
Oh, that's
I don't actually say it. For the fish. It's no. It's
nice. It's,
that's for the people who can't learn. I do it in a hearing impaired version for them. No, it's for environmental purposes. But you know what? They don't tell anybody that.
Nope.
They just tell them that it's all
it's
going
environmental.
For those bad agriculture people. I'm always seeing stuff online, you know, oh, those nut trees are using all the water. And I'm thinking, you're an idiot.
Well, and that's a fact a lot of people don't know or have forgotten, is this whole Central Valley project, which includes Shasta Dam, Trinity Dam, Whiskey Town, that whole water collection system was built for agriculture, number one. That was the purpose of holding back that water, was so that the valley would have irrigation. Second was, I believe, flood control. I mean, way down on the list was recreation, but it was built for agriculture, and now it's environmental.
For the fish.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. You know, you see these reservoirs that are full, and you flush them out, and I'm sorry, where are we getting our water to fight fire? Are they going to send these helicopters to fire hydrants in your town?
Yeah.
Well, good luck, because some of our towns don't have water either.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our towns require that. I actually saw a comment online the other day, too, about flood irrigating. Well, they're flood irrigating down in the valley. Hey, you know what? You should do some reading, because flood irrigation is actually super efficient in some places and does a tremendous amount to not only use less water, believe it or not, and recharge the groundwater. And keep the water table intact. So, you know, before you pipe off because you think you know what you're talking about, you should actually know what you're talking about and look at some of that. And hopefully you're represented by a member of Congress that is clueless, because you can go help them. Call their staff, find somebody who's interested, and educate them.
Right.
Because until we get other people at the national level who care about this And let's face it, there's not that many of us who represent really heavily forested lands. Right. And kind of we get buried every time.
And we've just kind of fallen into a trap of it's easier to take away people's water rights than it is to conserve our water or properly manage the water and build more water storage.
Well, there was a comment
made. It's
easier
just to take it away from everybody because there isn't enough.
Yeah, and there was a comment made by somebody who will remain nameless who wants to run for governor in this state who had actually asked why people would want to live out in places like that. Our gold rush towns and things that are burning down.
Burning down.
Why would you want to live out there? And it's like, oh, wow. You really don't get it, do you? And I think that's not uncommon. So, anyway, we live in a rural place. Not everyone who listens lives even in this country, and I get that. But these ideas tend to be exported from California. So, please bear in mind it's coming for a place near you. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry, who is done doing whatever it was he was supposed to be doing. I'm sure it was.
I'm sure he's stocking up like a true hoarder.
There you go. Yes.
Getting ready for the apocalypse.
Yeah, because if you look outside our window, it looks like it's already here.
Yeah, I know it.
You are listening to We the People. You can find a lot of this information. We've been doing shows for like 11 years. Please go back into our archives. They are uninterrupted, and they are free to listen to. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, you'll get your money's worth. With this show, it has my power at the show.
And we're back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and we have shows with him. Hold on, stretching back to 2017.
Yeah,
he has given us a ton of good information, and for those of you who don't really have time to listen to all of that, there's a ton of information posted, so you can just read it if you'd like, if that's faster. And he is the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Darn it. Bill, your thing got on me.
What?
The one where you can't say stuff. Both are congressional advisory boards. There, got that. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. He has a PhD in history and archaeology, and another PhD in strategic studies, because I guess two is better than one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we've decided. We've decided two is better than one, so we're happy he has them. And that was what led him to the CIA. He's the author of numerous books, including The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and Electric Armageddon. And he's working on a new one, but I'm not going to spoiler alert that. However, when it comes out, we'll have him come on and talk about it, if not before. So, Dr. Pry, how was the grocery store? Sorry, we didn't actually circle up ahead of time on the whole time thing. I realize you talked to other people besides us. That whole East Coast, West Coast thing, it's always a conundrum. So where would you like to start today? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We forced him back into the cone of silence.
Yes, we did. Apparently, the grocery store, there was quite a story there. We just weren't hearing it.
Apparently, there was more to it than that. Huh. Well, you know, it's always the beginning that's the hard part.
Is he back?
No. Hey, Travis, why don't you try calling him one more time? And we will continue tap dancing. Let's see. Well, actually, we don't have to tap dance because what I'd really like to tell you, and I just didn't want to do it all at the beginning, but I will now. He has an article out in The Hill this week. He called it How to Make an American Hiroshima. I believe The Hill changed the topic. What are you telling me? I broke something?
Yeah.
Oh. The article?
Yeah, the one I left in the
car. You want me to hand it to you?
Yeah, could you hand it to me?
Because I have it printed on paper?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thanks for highlighting it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, he has a terrific article, and I have posted that there. I think it comes out tomorrow, and along with the link to it. But Dr. Pry goes into a lot of different things, but always, always, always on the national security side, with our power grid. He's just worked on that for years and years and years and tried desperately to get our federal government to fully jump on board with that. Okay, how about we try this again? Uh-oh.
Dr. Pry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you are.
There
good.
He is.
Yeah, we lost you there. I don't know what happened.
I am so sorry that I left you guys in the lurch.
I
forgot that you started at my time. I'm on the East Coast. That you started at 3:00, and I thought it was at 3:30.
No worries.
And and you, as a married woman, you know, understand that where the lines of authority are, right? You know, so that when you tell your husband to go to the grocery store, he has to do it.
I'm not sure. I like really, what you're implying there.
But that's really no excuse. I would have defied that command from the commander-in-chief had I remembered that we started at 3. But anyway, here I am. You're probably the proud. You guys are so entertaining anyway, just by yourselves. I'm sure the first part of the show was better than anything you're going to hear.
I don't know.
I
was ranting about illegal marijuana and water. And the fires. So,
right.
Wasn't maybe as entertaining as it could have been. I've got better material. How's that?
Yeah. Well, you know, so here we are. We could talk about anything you like, but since this show is sandwiched between the 76th anniversary of Hiroshima, which happened on Friday, and tomorrow is Nagasaki Day, on August 9th. So maybe we should take, we could at least start off sort of doing a retrospective on, you know, where we are in terms of nuclear deterrence. A lot of people do that. Here we are, 76 years of living into the technological revolution of nuclear weapons and under the terror of the mushroom cloud. And how are we doing? And I would say that we're actually not doing well, not doing well at all. And the signs of deterrence failure are just everywhere. It's extremely disturbing. Period we're living through here. If you go back to just earlier in this year, April, May, you know, we had that big Russian so-called mobile exercise, which was really a mobilization, maybe not just an exercise. And it so terrified the Biden White House and NATO, though reportedly we put our forces on DEFCON 3 because they thought that Russia was getting ready to finally invade Ukraine and just finish that and possibly go as far as invading the frontline NATO states. Our own war games show that Russia can overrun the Ukraine and the frontline NATO states in 72 hours, and we can't stop them. Biden, no doubt, was casting his mind back, Biden and his team, to the Obama administration when Russia seized Crimea and started this long war in Ukraine, and there was nothing we could do about that. So that's the kind of thing that wouldn't have happened during the Cold War, when we had nuclear parity, when we were extremely conscientious about maintaining the nuclear balance to make sure that potential adversaries could gain no advantage over us in the numbers of nuclear weapons or in their technological sophistication. You know, both of the superpowers were very cautious back in those days. You know, that's why we didn't have wars in the Middle East, you know, around the periphery of Russia, for example, because we were afraid of how they would interpret that. And likewise, the Russians, Soviets at the time, you know, showed restraint too, you know, because they were concerned about our nuclear deterrent. In fact, it prevented them from invading and taking over European NATO all through the Cold War, even though they had an enormous advantage in conventional firepower on the ground and could have done it if the war was just limited to a conventional war. But here we are, you know, starting off the year with a close call in terms of the possible invasion of Ukraine and then frontline NATO states, and then this series of escalating cyber attacks from Russia, in the aftermath of that Ukraine crisis, we had actually talked about this on an earlier show where a Russian spokesman said, you know, if there's a war, it's going to be a cyber war, and we will win it. And they gave examples of the kinds of things they could do. They could turn off the lights in New York City. They could shut down the electric grid in Florida, or they could black out the whole United States, and they could win a cyber war against us. And then, not long after that, you know, we had the Colonial Pipeline, Russian hack, shutting down this pipeline to provide half the petroleum, not just to the civilian consumers in the eastern half of the United States, but to our military bases on the east coast of the United States. This is where we would project power to protect Ukraine if we wanted to do that, or to protect our NATO allies to whom we have security obligations by treaty. And we wouldn't be able to do that with the Colonial Pipeline shut down. And that's just one small part of our infrastructures. And after that, there's been a subsequent series of escalating attacks. Even after the Putin-Biden summit in Geneva, you know, President Biden and dictator Putin met in Geneva, Switzerland, to have a discussion about cyber issues and nuclear issues, national security issues, and it was one of these come-by-out moments. Biden came back very proudly with a statement co-signed with Putin that said, a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. You know, sort of a hallelujah moment for the anti-nuclear left. You know, we're supposed to take that seriously. And to my mind, that's the equivalent of Neville Chamberlain's 1938 Peace for Our Time moment. You know, when he came back from his summit with Adolf Hitler in Czechoslovakia, you know, saying, it's peace for our time because Hitler's promised he's not going to attack any more territories or engage in any more expansion. And then, of course, the very next year, World War II broke out because Hitler broke his word and invaded Poland. And Hitler and Chamberlain were not like-minded about the idea that a World War II could not be won and that a World War II should never be fought. It was entirely Hitler's intention to fight and win a World War II, just as it is Putin and Russia's obvious intention to be able to fight and win a nuclear World War III. You know, this is manifested by their massive nuclear weapons buildup. If they believe the nuclear war should never be fought and could not be won, then they would not be going to the extraordinary efforts they are with their relatively small economy, you know, to be the world's predominant superpower in terms of nuclear weapons and advanced nuclear weapons technologies, many of which we've described in past shows, and their military exercises that portray them winning nuclear World War III's over us. And the preparation, you know, to protect their people and their political military leadership with thousands of anti-missile systems and deep underground shelters that can accommodate hundreds of thousands of their political military leaders. We have nothing parallel to that, nor do we have the massive civil defense program for the general population that the Russians had. So you have to judge them how they act, not what they say and sign to naive Western political leaders like Joe Biden. You know, when they act as if a nuclear war is going to be fought and can be won. And the same is true of China as well. There, too, the, you know, signs of deterrence unraveling are pretty pretty disturbing. You know, we are, there's a great debate on going on in Washington now about not if China is going to invade Taiwan, but when and how soon. Is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be a few years from now? Is it going to be a decade from now? But most everybody, you know, even the doves seem to acknowledge that China is probably going to invade Taiwan at some point to try to take it over. And one of the things that got a little bit into the press, but there was so much more in it that hasn't been described to the American people, and I'll talk about this, is just recently, you know, within the past month, when the White House and the Pentagon were saying, trying to put China on notice that, you know, we don't want them to invade Taiwan, that we would defend Taiwan, you know, from an invasion, that the differences between China and Taiwan should be resolved peacefully. Japan did exactly what it's supposed to do as a good ally and said, and this is a bold thing for them to do given the circumstances, you know, it said that if the United States comes to defense of Taiwan, Japan will join us. Japan will participate in the defense of Taiwan because it is in Japan, not only in Japan's strategic interests, but that is their obligation as a strategic partner of the United States. And, you know, when they said that, I almost cheered inside, you know. So rarely do our allies stand up like that and be counted with us, you know. And that was a hard thing for Japan because their defense and foreign policy has tended to be kind of isolationist, you know. Theoretically, they're our ally, but they've been, successive Japanese governments have been very reluctant to talk about projecting force beyond Japan's borders. And most of their defense investment is just protect Japan and its territories. So this is one of the few times, it may be the first time, that Japan has been bold enough to step forward and be counted and say, yeah, we're going to help the United States defend a country that's not our own. We're going to help them defend Taiwan. Well, Japan's reward for this from China is that there is a TV channel or a website, you know, supposedly an unofficial channel. But there's no such thing as an unofficial channel in communist China.
No.
And it's run by some Chinese general, and it's got an affiliation with the People's Liberation Army. But it's supposed to be unofficial, okay? And they came out with, and they went ballistic on Japan and threatened to do a nuclear first strike on Japan. In past shows, we've talked about the China's so-called no first use pledge, where China, you know, has pledged that they will never be the first ones to use nuclear weapons. Well, wow, what happened to the no first use pledge? Suddenly they're threatening that they would use nuclear weapons first. They would make a nuclear first strike on Japan if Japan sent even one soldier to Taiwan, or one airplane to Taiwan, or one ship, and that China's response would be to nuke Japan first and continuously until they surrendered, and they would have an ignominious surrender. They would be crushed even worse than in World War II. And they, now, some of that was reported. The first strike has been reported in Western press, but a lot of the rest of it hasn't been. And I think it's because it causes such cognitive dissonance, because what was said is so contrary to what a lot of the mainstream Washington thinking about China is. Some of the, in addition to threatening to first strike against Taiwan, they also said that they would be joined in making a first strike, excuse me, against Japan. They would be joined in making a first strike against Japan by Russia and North Korea, which is arguably just as important as the threat of the first strike itself. Because here they are, you know, a People's Liberation Army affiliated channel saying that if there's a nuclear war, Russia and North Korea are going to be on our side. And
so obviously they're all chatting about this, which ought to make everybody feel great. Dr. Pryor, exactly. We have to take a really swift break here. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Okay, I'll let it go. I just had to tease you one little bit there.
Nice.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Nice job, Bill.
Hey, you got it. Thanks. No problem.
Should always find you gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
There we go. So, Dr. Pryor, where do you see these guys going with this? I mean, how much of this is the typical bluster, and how much of it is, you know, those guys in the U.S. seem to be, you know, solidly on the ship of fools. I think we can roll them this time.
Oh, I don't think any of it is bluster. You know, I always wonder why in the West, when nuclear threats are expressed by our adversaries, 99% of the time, you know, the liberal mainstream media, in fact, all the media, you know, almost trained to have that reaction. Oh, that's not important. It's just bluster. Don't take them seriously. Barking dogs don't bite, okay? But if a president of the United States were to say similar things, to make such threats, however mild, you know, the press immediately takes that with extreme seriousness and expects everybody to take with extreme seriousness, you know. And it wasn't just because of the Trump administration, but any president, Democrat or Republican, who would make a pronouncement about, hey, you know, under these circumstances, we might use nuclear weapons. You could hear a pin drop in the mainstream media, and that's taken seriously. It's a grave mistake for us to not take very seriously, you know, what our adversaries say. They don't bluster, which to me means, you know, it's just mindless propaganda, that's put out there and it's not serious. Mm. They've thought very deeply before they make any pronouncements along these lines. Continuing with what I was describing, I'd like to, the other things that have basically not been reported that were enunciated on this channel. So that was one of them, you know, this, which I think is incredibly important, this idea that China, Russia, and North Korea would cooperate in nuclear strikes against a U.S. ally. I've been saying that, and a few others have been saying all along that in the new Cold War, you know, we face this new de facto military alliance between China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and international terrorism. And I think that this is another thing that verifies that. You know, and in effect, they're saying, you know, if you fight one of us, you're going to be fighting all of us, including in a nuclear war. And they have exercised together, the Chinese and the Russians. And just this past, in the past few days, there's been another pronouncement, not a news leak, a leak, that the Russian military and Chinese are getting together in Beijing to engage in joint strategic planning. So, this knocks into a cocked hat one of Washington's fondest assumptions, and one of our assumptions that's most that's fundamental to our national security, fundamental to undermining our national security, since it's a myth. And that's the idea that Russia, China, and North Korea don't work together and even can't work together precisely because they're totalitarian states. There's this notion abroad among, you know, liberal intelligentsia in Washington that only democracies can have real alliances. You can't have a real alliance among totalitarian, authoritarian states, you know, because they don't trust each other, because they don't believe in coexistence, and because eventually they'll go to war against each other. And all of that is true. But they can ally against a common enemy, you know, long enough to destroy that common enemy before they turn on each other. And we saw that during World War II, you know, with the Hitler-Stalin Pact and the Tripartite Axis between Germany, Italy, and Japan, which came very close to conquering the world and probably would have if Hitler hadn't, after conquering Western Europe, decided to turn on the Soviet Union. You know, that's really what saved us in World War II. We often talk about winning World War II. We really lost. I mean, it was really that Germany lost World War II because of making that profound strategic mistake and breaking up that alliance. You know, our people in Washington have got to get it through our heads that there isn't any China card for us to play against North Korea or Russia. These guys are closer to each other and are working together, and even have military plans against us, and that if we and our military needs to get out of its head, that it can fight a war like just against one of them, like against Russia or North Korea. All of them, you know, are going to come in against us, you know, in a conflict. Now, moving on with, you know, the other point, very important couple points that this made that did not find its way into the Western press is the statement also talked about what would they do after they nuked Japan into submission with a nuclear first strike, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans. They would they have a plan to divide up the Japanese home island, so Japan would be broken up into four different countries. And they've got a what they call a peace constitution for each of those four countries. And those four countries would then be occupied by Russia and China, military troops, boots on the ground, to administer these countries, which hardly can be called countries if they're occupied by foreign powers like Russia and China and are being administered by them. So this is a pretty sophisticated vision and a pretty well-developed vision of what to do with one of our allies. And it makes me think, in fact, I think it is obvious, that they have probably thought through, not just for Japan, but for all of our allies, and for the United States itself, a new world order, and very much how it would look. And there's probably peace constitutions in their drawers for the eastern half of the United States and the western half of the United States after they break us up into different countries. It's very much along the lines of the way the Japanese during World War II, when Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany were cooperating, and they had a vision of the future, for example, that would divide the United States down the Mississippi River, and Nazi Germany would get the eastern half, and Imperial Japan would get the western half. So this is very serious. This is where you have nuclear armed superpowers. I know it sounds like a fantasy here, but this is how deeply they've been thinking about these sorts of things. And not just words, but now we know, I can't recall if we've talked about this on the show, because it's been such a recent development, you know, over this past month and a half, the discovery of these 250 ICBM silos that are building in the desert by China, and they're probably for their DF-41 ICBM. This is enormously important and consequential in terms of an actual nuclear threat. You know, just in January or February, the Pentagon, when they gave their worldwide threat briefing to Congress, they didn't say anything about these silos. You know, they lowballed again. They actually lowered their estimate of the number of nuclear weapons China has from down to 200. Even the anti-nuclear left-wing Union of Concerned Scientists criticized the Pentagon for underestimating the Chinese nuclear threat. Even USCIS had a higher estimate of the number of weapons, which was 350. And the Pentagon used to estimate it was something like 350 as well. And, you know, and I think that this is another sign of the politicization of intelligence with the incoming Biden administration. Now we've got Joe Biden in as president. Suddenly the Chinese nuclear threat, you know, is being ratcheted back. And Congress is not told, assuming that the Pentagon saw the silos. I can't believe they didn't see them. You know, they cover hundreds of square miles. So they must have seen them. The reason we know about them is because independent academics were looking at commercial satellite photography, and they found the silos, and they broke the story to the press. And then the Pentagon last week confirmed, yes, they are ICBM silos. Why didn't they tell Congress back in January and February? I mean, or did they actually miss them? Are we that incompetent? I can't believe that incompetent. I think they kept the news from the American people. Hopefully they briefed Congress in private, but nobody leaked from Congress, so I don't even think they told Congress about the silos. These 250 silos, you know, if they're going to be for the DF-41 ICBM, which seems it's clear that they are, the DF-41 carries 10 highly accurate weapons, 10 highly accurate nuclear warheads. It's the first strike weapon. One warhead from a DF-41 can take out a Minuteman silo. Well, they only have 400 Minuteman silos. When these silos are completed, you know, in 2 or 3 years, this will give them 2,500 additional highly accurate first strike weapons, 2,500 of them. The entire, just on the DF-41, just in those silos. Overall, they'll probably have 3,000 or more nuclear weapons in their inventory in 2 to 3 years. You know, the United States only has 1,400 warheads in its whole nuclear deterrent, in its whole strategic nuclear deterrent on all of our missiles and all of our bombers, you know, right now. That's more than twice as many nuclear weapons as the United States has. So I know I have talked in the show in the past about how, you know, our intelligence community, you know, has really been incompetent when it comes to China, estimating the nuclear threat from China. And that there's all kinds of reasons to think that the number that we have been estimating the nuclear threat from China is being far too low. And now it's just amazing here in Washington and the inside of the Beltway to see these people turning themselves into pretzels to try to bend over backwards to rationalize, you know, how either the Chinese aren't going to deploy to explain away these silos, that it's not that big of a threat, or to try to justify their lowballing the threat, to reconcile it with saying they've got 200 warheads today, but in a few years they're gonna increase that number to 3,000. You know, the intellectual gymnastics that are going on. To give one example, and again, I can't remember if we talked about this on a previous show or if we even discussed this topic, but one of the absurd arguments that's being made was floated by a guy named Jeffrey Lewis, political scientist. He's the mainstream liberal media's favorite so-called nuclear expert. He doesn't know anything about nuclear weapons or missiles. He's a political scientist, but he's a university academic, and they all because hey, they always
Dr. Pry. Before I don't want to get cut off in the middle of that, and we're into 20 seconds or so before we've got a break for the news at the top of the hour. But since we've wrested you away from your chores, we have you hostage for another hour. So we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, I'm sure they make it right. I hope they never sleep back.